From claims of healings and visions to the world's most inexplicable events, whether you're a believer or a skeptic, the truth is always worth the hunt.
EWTN Radio presents The Miracle Hunter with Michael O'Neill.
Welcome to The Miracle Hunter Radio Show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill and The Miracle Hunter. People who tune into this show know that I love talking about American saints. Well, we've got a new future one on the way. Her name is Sister Anella Zervas from Minnesota. We'll be talking today with Bishop Andrew Cousins about the possibility of her now, with an open cause, advancing ahead to Venerable, Blessed, and then to Saint. Later in the show, we'll be speaking with Monica Amparo, the author of a new book called One Mother, One Family, A Scriptural Meditation on the Rosary with Worldwide Sacred Art. It's got so many images of Mary from all around the world. I love this new book from Monica. We'll be talking to her in just a little bit. Check out my series, They Might Be Saints. We've got an episode on Blessed Miriam Teresa Demjanovic, which airs on October 21st, and it's the story of the short, impactful life of Teresa Demjanovic. I present the case for canonization for the Sister of Charity, which includes the only known cure of bilateral macular degeneration. People can watch online at theymightbesaints.com, or you can tune in on October 21st. You can also check out my series, Explore with the Miracle Hunter. We'll be covering one of my favorite miracle-working saints, that, of course, is Padre Pio, on Saturday, October 18th at 5:30 p.m. Padre Pio, the great miracle-working saint, is the subject of this one, and Journey to Italy with Me to meet the man known worldwide for healing miracles by location and exhibiting the wounds of Christ in the stigmata. That's October 18th at 5:30 p.m. Central Time. Later in the show, we're going to be looking at the might-be saint of the day. For today, we've got Blessed Theobald of Narbonne. And also, the 365 Days with Mary project today looks at the Virgin of the Miracles from Almaguer in Colombia in the year 1619. And the question of the week, have there ever been any apparitions of Saint Joseph? I'll do my best to answer that one. And the miracle of the day relates to the alleged apparitions at Garabandal in Spain. The very first message was given on today's date, October 18, in the year 1961. Let's take a look at the miracle news. We do this every week, where we talk about the miracles happening around the world and those things that relate to miracles. And this is one of these relate-to-miracle kind of reports, where Pope Leo presents his first golden rose, and he gave it to Our Lady of Fatima. Now, the golden rose was the first of Pope Leo XIV's pontificate, following the tradition where popes bestow a special rose to a Marian shrine that they appreciate. And it's customary for popes to present a golden rose as a special honor to a particular Marian shrine. It doesn't matter if the shrine has already gotten a golden rose. It's seen as a personal gift given by a specific pope. And recent popes have been very generous with such awards, and Francis is recorded as giving 16 golden roses out during his pontificate. Benedict gave 19 shrines a golden rose. Now, Pope Leo XIV asked for the original statue of Our Lady of Fatima to be transferred to the Vatican, to allow him to present her another golden rose at this recent Marian Jubilee. And she presided over the Rosary for Peace held at the Vatican on October 11th, which Leo had urged the faithful to join. And the Shrine of Our Lady of Fatima has received a total of 4 golden roses. So that's today's miracle news relating to the Marian apparition at Fatima. Pope Leo wanted to bestow the golden rose, another golden rose, on that famous statue of Our Lady. For more information on this story or any of the other miracle stories, you can go to miraclehunter.com, or you can go to the Facebook page of The Miracle Hunter, and on there I post all the miracles and the stories about them happening all around the world. Let's take a look at Catholic Pub Trivia. We do this every week, where we ask a trivia question and give out a prize to an emailer that writes in the fastest with the correct answer. People can go to miraclehunter.com or send me an email to questions@miraclehunter.com if they think they have the right answer. And answers and winners will be posted on the show page on miraclehunter.com. Now, last week, we were talking about the canonically crowned image of Our Lady of La Leche in St. Augustine. We were talking about that new Hidden Gems episode. People can go to shrines.tv to watch that episode. And so we were talking about that canonically crowned statue at St. Augustine, Our Lady of La Leche, And we asked for, can you name any of the other canonically crowned images in the United States? And so the answer to that question was Our Lady of Prompt Succor in New Orleans, Our Lady of Mount Carmel in Manhattan, Our Lady of the Immaculate Conception in Lake Charles, Louisiana, Our Lady of the Conquest in Santa Fe, and Mary of Nazareth in Doylestown, Pennsylvania. Any of those would have been acceptable answers. Thank you for everyone who wrote in with answers to that question. Now, for this week's question, we're talking today about Sister Anela Zervas being declared a servant of God. What other people from the state of Minnesota are also on the path to sainthood? If you think you know that question, want to win the prize, the image of the faces of Mary, send me an email to questions@miraclehunter.com, and answers and winners will be posted on the show page on miraclehunter.com. We need to take a short break, but when we come back, we're going to be talking with Monica Amparo, the author of One Mother, One Family. Stay with us for that.
Now, back to the Miracle Hunter on EWTN. Here's Michael O'Neill.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Miracle Hunter radio show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm the Miracle Hunter. People who tune into this show know that I love talking about Marian devotions, and we always do a Marian devotion of the day as it lines up exactly to the day's date in the calendar year. That's something we do in our 365 Days with Mary project. But there's a new book that's out that's a great look at the Rosary. And it's called One Mother, One Family, A Scriptural Meditation on the Rosary with Worldwide Sacred Art. And this book is right up my alley because it goes through numerous Marian titles, connects them to the Rosary in a really meaningful way. And the author of the book is Monica Amparo, and she's here with us today. Welcome today, Monica.
Thank you so much, Michael.
Well, this is a fun book. I really love this one, this book about, especially when in consideration of Our Lady of the Rosary this month. I think this is a great timing to talk about this book about meditation on the Rosary. Now, tell us a little bit. It's a quite comprehensive book, and it's you have many, many different facets of Mary that you look at in this book, but what inspired you to put this together?
Yes. You know, Michael, there were a couple of things. I think in the immediate was that my husband is originally from the Philippines. So we've been married 31 years, and with him, I've been involved in ministry that has a lot of Filipinos. And I've always enjoyed praying the rosary. And I own 5 or 6 books here at home. And when I started looking at the sacred art in the Rosary book, I did not find any continent represented except Western Europe. And since 3 of my 4 grandparents were born in Lebanon, and all 4 of my husband's grandparents were born in the Philippines, I thought that it would be high time that we start to show some sacred art from other continents, because based on my research, I was quite delighted and surprised to find that it is also rather long-standing in these other continents.
Wonderful. And I think that this is such an important book because the Rosary is the great Marian devotion that we have throughout the world. And you say connecting all the continents and connecting all these titles of Mary around the world, we're all connected by the Rosary. So this is a great scriptural meditation. When we look at this book, how does it actually connect with the devotion of the Rosary?
Yes. Well, you know, I think what I'm actually encouraging our church to do, Michael, is to return to praying the rosary with scripture. I think that and deep God can speak to us through the scriptures. And then also, when we view the worldwide art, we can see our neighbor from all around the world. And in addition with praying with scripture, we can look at the virtues being demonstrated by Jesus, Mary, all of the holy men and women, which is really what I think St. Louis de Montfort was aiming for and encouraging us to pray the rosary is that it's about virtue modeling.
Wonderful. And let's talk a little bit about the layout of the book, the organization. It's quite a comprehensive book, as I mentioned. It goes through the various mysteries and reflections on those, and it goes through Marian titles all around the world. Tell us a little bit about how the book is laid out, especially the integration of all the art from around the world.
Yes. So, you know, the rosary is on, it's a simple and also a complicated prayer in part. So what I try to do, the rosary is a collection of 20 sacred stories referred to as mysteries that are distributed among four main groups. So the edges of the book are color-coded to show those groups. The joyful mysteries are pink. The luminous mysteries are green. The sorrowful mysteries are red. The glorious mysteries are gold. And then pages having to do with the Blessed Mother are blue. I wanted, you know, this is the first book, actually, the first rosary book that is showing sacred art from all seven continents. So the book does include two pages devoted to each continent to show a selection of Marian images, because actually that was another pleasant surprise is how many amazing images there are of Mary all around the world. And then it does include about 50 pages of notes, because, you know, for about 500 years, we have been a bit saturated with the Western European art, which is very beautiful and no doubt very well done. I came back from a two-week trip to Rome in early September. But, you know, it's one perspective. It's a perspective of one half of one continent. And I think it's important for all of us to realize in the church the very long-standing sacred art from the many other continents. And I, you know, if people are interested to delve deeper into that art, there is the notes section which allows them to do that.
Absolutely. And I love that about this book. And we're talking today with Monica Amparo, the author of One Mother, One Family, A Scriptural Meditation on the Rosary with Worldwide Sacred Art. And of course, I love in your book how you have a section devoted to Our Lady of all continents, and you go through all the continents around the world. And it's fun, kind of just jogging my memory as I flip through those pages of all the places that I've visited all around the world. And it's so well laid out. So I'm grateful that you did that. Let's go through a few of the titles in various continents and places around the world. How about Our Lady of Palestine? Talk a little bit about that one. People might not know what that one is.
Yes, and I think that is so poignant today, because today is actually the two-year anniversary of the Gaza conflict. And in this image, we have Mary holding the city of Jerusalem in her lap. It symbolizes her love and care for all of Jerusalem's inhabitants, Christians, Jews, and Muslims, which unfortunately is often a region marred by a lot of conflict, even though that's also the, you know, where Jesus was born, taught, and died.
And, of course, one of my all-time favorites, I always have to talk about Our Lady of Guadalupe, those apparitions that are attributed to Juan Diego in the year 1531, as it were, of course, outside of Mexico City today. Talk about how you discuss Our Lady of Guadalupe in this book.
Yes, you know, well, I think one thing I'd like to emphasize, Michael, to your listeners is that, you know, I spent about 3 years looking for, you know, sacred worldwide art, and I, you know, really tried to find the oldest images done by a member of the represented group. Now, when we look at Our Lady of Guadalupe, I would almost use the expression, you know, this is an image not made by human hands. This is a divine image that miraculously appeared on the Tilma of Juan Diego. So I consider it, you know, incredibly authentic, coming as it were, almost like straight from heaven. So in the book, when I showed the memorari, I show Our Lady of Guadalupe. And then the other thing that's really very impressive is that over the course of about 10 years after this Thelma of Juan Diego, you know, sort of debuted in 1531, you have the mass conversion of approximately 9 million indigenous people. So sure. I think Mary was able to accomplish a feat that, you know, probably centuries of Spanish friars could not. And then with due respect, and I don't mean that in a, you know, disrespectful way, but, and then also just from a Marian standpoint, Our Lady of Guadalupe is the most visited Marian shrine in the world.
Correct.
I think that's a nice to say.
Yes, over 20 million pilgrims per year. It's absolutely amazing. We're talking today with Monica Amparo, the author of the new book, One Mother, One Family, A Scriptural Meditation on the Rosary with Worldwide Sacred Art. And let's go to a different part of the world next. How about Our Lady of Valankani in India? That is an apparition story that that comes from about the middle of the 16th century.
Yes, you know, this is quite interesting also. In my book, Michael, I have a section toward the back, Mary and the World Religions, because the figure of Mary is truly a bridge between faith and cultures. So in India, we have a Marian image that is venerated interdenominationally by Christians, Muslims, and Hindus. And I would like to add, I do have a friend from India, born and raised there, now living in the United States, and she told me, Monica, there is a special novena for the Hindus in Hindi. And I think that's just amazing. So we live in a rather divisive age right now, and I think it's so nice to see ways that we can be united and not just, you know, with fellow maybe Christian brothers and sisters, but also across religions.
Absolutely. And as we wrap up the interview today, I'd love to ask you about this new book, One Mother, One Family. What is your hope that people who pick up this book will gain from the book?
Yes, you know, Michael, I really have two hopes. The first one is that they will see through praying with deep scripture that God loves us deeply and passionately and seeks a relationship with each one of us. And on this point, I would like to quote a verse that I have in the Third Luminous Mystery, which basically says that the kingdom of heaven is like a merchant searching for fine pearls. On finding one pearl of great price, he went and sold all he had and bought it. God is the merchant. Every one of us is that pearl of great price. And God is selling all he had in the sacrifice of his son so that we can see that God suffers alongside us. And then very quickly, the second point, we are called to love our neighbor, whether he or she might live next door or halfway around the world. And I believe using sacred art, praying with sacred art from all seven continents, helps us to better visualize that neighbor.
Wonderful. And for people who want to pick up this new book, One Mother, One Family, what's the best place that people can go?
There's several options. Probably the easiest is on Amazon. The publisher, Eastern Christian Publications, also is selling the Rosary book on his website, ecpubs.com. And if you happen to live in or near Washington, D.C., it's sold at the gift shops of the Basilica of the Immaculate Conception, St. John Paul II National Shrine, the Franciscan Monastery, and in New York City, the gift shop of St. Patrick's Cathedral.
Oh, wonderful. Well, we're so grateful to you, Monica Amparo, for putting together this great book, One Mother, One Family, A Scriptural Meditation on the Rosary with Worldwide Sacred Art. Thank you so much, Monica, for joining us on today's program.
Thank you so much, Michael, for your time.
God bless. That was Monica Amparo. Great new book, One Mother, One Family, You know I love Marian devotions, and this book has them all. It's a beautiful collection of worldwide sacred art connected to the rosary. We need to take a short break, but when we come back, we're going to be looking at the question of the week. Stay with us for that.
Now, back to the Miracle Hunter on EWTN. Here's Michael O'Neill.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Miracle Hunter radio show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm the Miracle Hunter. Hey, I love getting your questions. People write in from around the world with questions about miracles happening in today's world and those that have happened centuries ago. And I love getting these questions. Some of them are pretty strange and interesting, but I like to hear what people are thinking about. But I also love getting questions in person. So I travel around the country and I give talks at different shrines and parishes and conferences. And I always talk about miracles, of course, because that's my thing. But people have me talk for about 45 minutes, and then I answer questions and answers afterwards and do a book signing, etc. So anybody who would like to have me come to their parish, you can go to my website, miraclehunter.com, and click on the contact tab and send me a message that way. And maybe I'll be speaking at a parish nearby you sometime soon. So for today's show, we have a pretty good email question that came in. Hello, Miracle Hunter. May the peace of Christ be with you. I wanted to ask you if you have any apparitions, messages, approvals related to Saint Joseph. Please and thank you, Joseph Vargas. Well, thank you, Joseph, for a great question. And it's pretty interesting because when we talk about apparitions of saints, of course, the Virgin Mary has the big lead over all the other saints. If you combined all the apparitions of saints throughout history that are reported and investigated and approved, the Virgin Mary has a pretty big lead. But Saint Joseph has appeared on a handful of locations, and one of those cases is the famous final apparition at Fatima in Portugal. So during the final apparition at Fatima on October 13th, 1917, witnessed by thousands of people, the children saw Saint Joseph holding the child Jesus and blessing the world as the sun danced in the sky. And of course, these Fatima apparitions were formally approved in 1930, and we talk about all of them being approved. And so that vision of Saint Joseph is therefore implicitly approved as part of that Fatima event. Perhaps the most famous singular apparition of Saint Joseph is that of Saint Joseph at Codignac in France in the year 1660. And on June 7, 1660, Saint Joseph appeared to the shepherd Gaspard Ricard, pointing to a rock and telling him, "I am Joseph, lift it and you will drink." And a miraculous spring appeared, and the site became a pilgrimage destination. And this was recognized by the local bishop, and Cotignac later became the site of an officially approved apparition site dedicated to the Holy Family. And then there's another one, an apparition to Mother Mary Bardaudi, that was of Blessed Mary of Jesus Crucified in the 1870s. And she was a Carmelite mystic, and she reported several visions of Saint Joseph encouraging trust in divine providence and devotion to the Holy Family. So these apparitions were never formally investigated and approved, as are many public apparitions, but she was declared a saint through her canonization in 2015. So we might say, by virtue of her being canonized, her sanctity and mystical experiences were likewise approved. So that's another apparition of Saint Joseph. But these are few and far between, perhaps just like his words in the Gospels. But we have Mary being the number one appearer when we talk about mystical apparitions around the world. So thanks so much for your question, Joseph. And if you have a question for the Miracle Hunter, can you send me an email to questions@miraclehunter.com? And maybe I'll be answering your question on the air next week. Let's take a look at the 365 Days with Mary project. We do this every week where we look at the Marian devotion of the days. It lines up exactly to the day's date. We all know Fatima, May 13th, or Lourdes, February 11th, or Guadalupe, December 12th. But believe it or not, there's a different other Marian devotion that lines up each day to the calendar year. And so for today's date, we've got October 18th, the Virgin of the Miracles from Almaguer from Colombia in the year 1619. And the story goes that on October 18th, 1619, a very simple woman and devotee of the Virgin found a rustic old thin tablet in the church of Almaguer with a striking image of the Virgin Milagros. Since then, Almaguereños devotees celebrate their patron's favors and with an event attributed to La Milagrosa, and that was the image remaining intact despite the onslaught of guerrilla warfare in March 2000 against the small village of Almaguer, where the rebels raided the Catholic Church, dynamited the altar, and destroyed the whole church, the rectory, and dozens of homes in the village. And that is the Village of the Miracles from Almaguer in Colombia in the year 1619. For more information on this fascinating devotion, or any of the hundreds of other Marian devotions from around the world, you can go to 365dayswithmary.com, pick up the book, download the free app from the Apple App Store, or you can go to Facebook and join any of the 10,000 other followers who get a different Marian devotion each and every day of the calendar year. Let's take a look at the miracle of the day. We always like to find a miracle that happened on the day's date at some day in Christian history. And so we have a possible miracle, I suppose you could say, from October 18th in Garabandal in Spain, San Sebastián de Garabandal, where those famous apparitions of Mary were alleged in the 1960s. So on October 18th, 1961 at Garabandal, the very first apparition occurred. Four young girls claimed to receive a message from the Virgin Mary, and one of the messages is dated to that day. So it called for repentance, frequent visits to the Blessed Sacrament, sacrifices and penance, and it warned that if people do not change, a chastisement would come. Of course, there are many devotees to Our Lady of Garabandal, and I get many emails about this, but the Church has never formally approved the apparitions, nor have they condemned them. So we might say that they are private, unapproved apparitions, and caution from the Catholic Church has always been advised, but it's never been approved, never been condemned, so Catholics can use their discernment to decide what to do with the apparitions from Garabandal. Maybe someday we'll see them approved as nihil obstat by the Catholic Church according to their new 1994 norms. But that is today's miracle of the day. Let's take a look at the sainthood news. We always try to keep you up to date on who's coming down the pipeline from servant of God to venerable to blessed and then to saint. Well, there's a big canonization happening on October 19th. In Rome, the canonization of Bartolo Longo. He was an Italian lawyer who, after years of involvement in occultism and spiritualism, converted back to Catholicism and became a lay Dominican. He devoted his life to promoting the Rosary, founding the Shrine of Our Lady of the Rosary in Pompeii, and serving the poor throughout various charitable works. This Mass is happening on Sunday, October 19th at 10:30 a.m. local time, and will be presided over by Pope Leo XIV, of course. Also in that same Mass, Ignatius Charikarala Mylalam, an Armenian Catholic and Archbishop and Martyr, will be canonized, as will be Peter Tarot, a lay catechist from Papua New Guinea who was a martyr, Vincenza Maria Poloni, the founder of the Sisters of Mercy of Verona, Maria Troncati, the religious sister, Daughters of Mary, Jose Gregorio Hernandez Cisneros, the lay physician, Doctor of the Poor, he was called, in Venezuela. And of course, I mentioned Bartolo Longo. This is a big canonization coming right up on October 19th. We look for somebody whose feast day or death anniversary lines up for the might-be saint of the day. And for today's day, we've got Blessed Theobald of Narbonne from the 11th century, who was born in Narbonne, France. He was a Mercedarian friar who worked with St. Ferdinand of Pontalegre. In 1253, the two sailed from Barcelona to Tunis in North Africa to ransom Christian imprisoned and enslaved for their faith by the Muslims. By October 16, 1253, they had freed 129, but were double-crossed by some of the slave traders and turned over to Muslim royal authorities. Ferdinand was eventually released and ordered to leave the country with his ransomed slaves, but Theobald was tortured and as executed. He died as a martyr. With one miracle, Blessed Theobald of Narbonne will be known as Saint Theobald, and he is today's Might Be Saint of the Day. And for those people who are interested in They Might Be Saints, you can pick up my book called They Might Be Saints, available at EWTN Religious Catalog ewtnrc.com. I think it's my best one. Or you can check out my series, They Might Be Saints, which airs each week on EWTN. This week, on Tuesday, October 21st, we have They Might Be Saints, Blessed Miriam Teresa Demjanovic. The short, impactful life of Teresa Demjanovic, I present the case for her canonization for this Sister of Charity, which includes the only known cure of bilateral macular degeneration. Check that one out, They Might Be Saints, Blessed Miriam Teresa Demjanovic. We need to take a short break, but when we come back, we're going to be talking with Bishop Andrew Cousins from the Diocese of Crookston about the brand new servant of God, Sister Anela Zervas. Stay with us for that.
Now, back to the Miracle Hunter on EWTN. Here's Michael O'Neill.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Miracle Hunter radio show on EWTN Radio. This is Michael O'Neill. I'm the Miracle Hunter. People who tune into this show know that I love talking about saints, future saints specifically, and future American saints even more specifically. And we've got someone new on the path to sainthood coming out of Minnesota, and that's Sister Anela Zervas. And we're so excited because this past week we saw the opening of the cause, and that's a big deal anytime somebody is being proposed for sainthood, that very first step where a person is launched as a servant of God, and they move along then to venerable, blessed, and then hopefully, eventually, someday a saint. And we're also excited when there's when we have saints from the United States. That gives us all a little bit of hope and inspiration, for sure. Well, we're so excited today to be talking to Bishop Andrew Cousins from the Diocese of Crookston. He's joining us to talk today about Sister Anela Zervas. Welcome to the program today, Bishop.
Thank you, Michael. I'm delighted to be with you.
It's great to have you back on the show, and this is exciting news for all American Catholics. I think seeing somebody being proposed as a potential saint is exciting from our very own soil. So this is a big deal, and for you coming out of Minnesota, I think this is something exciting as well. And for those people who don't know, and many people are just learning the name now, Sister Anela Zervas, who was she?
Well, Sister Anela Zervas was a religious sister, a Benedictine religious sister at St. Benedict's Monastery in St. Joseph, Minnesota. But she was born and she died in the Diocese of Crookston here in Moorhead, Minnesota. And in some ways, she was a pretty ordinary person in the sense of, you know, she was a devout young woman who grew up in a really wonderful Catholic family and discovered her vocation early. But her life was transformed through suffering, and she really becomes for us an example of, you know, what St. John Paul II used to call the gospel of suffering when he spoke in his encyclical letter on human suffering. And Sister Anela was a heroic example of how to live the gospel of suffering because of her life.
Wonderful. And I think that for every canonization cause, it's always so interesting, sort of the backstory of how these things come to be. Everybody hears of the saint once they're canonized, but it always takes some special effort to get these things moving, and sometimes started and restarted over the decades. Talk a little bit about the cause of Sister Anela Zervas, how she was considered to be somebody holy, and then she was proposed as a potential saint. How did it get started?
Well, it's an interesting story because she died in 1926 in, you know, in the air of holiness, we say, in the odor of holiness, right, or sanctity. And so a lot of people right away thought she was a saint just because of the heroic suffering. She had a very terrible skin disease that the doctors, the Mayo Clinic, other experts couldn't figure out. And she really lived a kind of tortured existence for 3 years because of the pain that she endured. But she endured it heroically and for love of the Lord. And so immediately people thought she was a saint, and actually in the 40s and the 50s and the 60s, books were written about her. You know, we even found a relics of Sister Anela, like her clothing. The sisters of her monastery kept some of her clothing and made relics out of it. People thought that she was potentially a saint early on. But then it just sort of happened that the cause sort of went quiet for a while. And then there was actually, you know, a man who claims to have had an apparition of Sister Anela when he was painting in the cemetery of the monastery, and she appeared to him. He didn't know who she was, and they had a normal conversation about his painting and the Blessed Virgin Mary, and he thought it was just a sister in a habit. But it was interesting because the sisters of that monastery didn't wear that style of habit anymore. And so someone else pointed out to him that this might have been something supernatural. And then he saw a picture of Sister Nella and realized it was her. Discovered then, you know, there were other people who knew about her as a holy nun, and many people then also through this man was Patrick Norton, through his, you know, kind of intervention, people came to know about her, and then people started praying to her, and some of those people started experiencing graces from praying to her and visiting her tomb, and so the sort of cult, you know, that we talk about with saints regained traction again probably about 15 years ago. And when I came to the Diocese of Christian as a bishop, the irony was that I had already known about Sister Nella because my sister had heard about her, and she had taken one of my nieces who was struggling with migraine headaches to visit Sister Anela's tomb. And my niece was healed of her migraine headaches through that intercession of Sister Anela, we think. And so my sister was a big promoter of her. And then I moved to the Diocese of Crookston and found out that this is where she lived and died, and that she had a lot of other people who believed that she was a saint. And so that's why we started looking into it.
That's wonderful. We're talking today with Bishop Andrew Cousins from the Diocese of Crookston about the cause for Sister Anela Zervas. And I've met Patrick Norton myself, and I've been to the grave of Sister Anela, and I have spoken to Patrick over the years many times about this potential cause. And I'm so grateful to know that it's moving forward and that there's the opening of the cause from this past week. And if you can sort of tell the listeners a little bit about what does it mean exactly, this opening of the cause, the declaration of somebody as a servant of God, and what will be happening at the Mass, what happened at the Mass to launch this?
Yeah, so, you know, the Church gives us pretty prescribed rules for how to do this because the Church takes very seriously this process of the canonization of someone and wants to make sure that it's a thorough and accurate process. And so this past year, when we decided that we were going to pursue this, we had to engage experts in canon law who could help us. But basically, we had to do a set of consultations this first year of various groups. We consulted the faithful of the Diocese of Crookston, the priests of the Diocese of Crookston. We consulted the sisters at Mount St. Benedict's Monastery, where Sister Anela had lived. We consulted the people of her parish. We consulted the bishops of the region and also the whole USCCB, all of the bishops of the United States. And then with all those consultations, we established a guild, which is a group of people who ultimately made petition for this cause. They petitioned me as the bishop to open this cause. And then we sent all that to Rome, and we had to have Rome's permission that there was nothing, you know, standing in the way of opening the cause. And we got that permission probably in late August. And so then we were able to schedule this Mass that we had, which was the kind of first official opening of the cause. The cause is an investigative process, you know, it's a tribunal, like we have to judge. And there's a diocesan phase to that and a Roman phase to that. And so this is just the very first step. Now we have opened the diocesan phase, and now the diocesan investigation can begin. And we have, you know, historians and other experts who will interview people. They'll look at all the documents about Sister Anela's life. They'll look at everything we can to determine whether or not we think her life is venerable. And then we'll gather all that data, and then we'll send that on ultimately to Rome, and we'll probably have another big Mass when we do that, right? We'll have the closing of the diocesan phase of the cause, and we'll send that all to Rome. And then, of course, Rome does their own investigation, and the Dicastery for the Causes of Saints has to investigate this whole thing. And they will then determine whether or not they think Sister Anela is venerable. And then if she's venerable, then, as you know, then we need miracles. That's where you come in, I suppose.
Yeah, no, that's the exciting time when the miracle hunting begins, to get those miracles that boost somebody along that path from blessed, and then a miracle after that to saint. So those are things that we'll all hope and pray for in the years and decades ahead, perhaps, related to Sister Anela Zervas. And so for those people who are interested to find out more, who want to learn about the life of Sister Anela Zervas, this is a new name to most American Catholics, where can they go to find out more, perhaps find a prayer to pray to Sister Anela?
You can go to the website of the Sister Anela Guild, which is just sisteranela.org, and that's two N's and two L's in Anela. sisteranela.org. And, you know, there's kind of a famous joke in her family. When she got the name Sister Anela, she told her mom, and her mom said, there's no Saint Anela, because sisters are usually named after a saint. And Sister Anela said, well, I'll have to be the first.
There you
and
go.
So we're trying to help her accomplish that.
Wonderful. Well, what exciting news coming out of the Diocese of Crookston, this opening of the cause for Sister Anela Zervas. She's out of the gate as a servant of God. And then with some further investigation, some interview process, some details sent to Rome, and that positio will be reviewed by Rome, and hopefully we'll see her declared as a venerable, then a blessed, and a saint someday. Well, we're so grateful to you, Bishop Andrew Cousins, for joining us on today's program and for sharing the great news about Sister Anela Zervas.
Thank you very much, Michael. God bless you.
God bless. That was Bishop Andrew Cousins. Great discussion about Sister Anela Zervas. Maybe someday soon we'll have a new American saint. And that's all the time we have for today's show. If you missed any of this episode or want to catch up on past episodes, you can go to ewtn.com/radio, check out the audio archives, or download the free EWTN app. I'd like to thank our guest today, Bishop Andrew Cousins, talking to us about the cause for Sister Anela Zervas, and also Monica Amparo, the author of One Mother, One Family. Check out my series, Explore with the Miracle Hunter, this week on Saturday, October 18th at 5:30 p.m. Central Time. I look at San Giovanni Rotondo. Of course, Padre Pio, the great miracle-working saint, is my latest subject. Journey to Italy to meet the man known worldwide for his healing miracles by location and exhibiting the wounds of Christ in the Stigmata. And I'd like to thank you for joining me today on Miracle Hunter, where from claims of healings and visions to the world's most inexplicable events, whether you're a believer or a skeptic, the truth is always worth the hunt. Talk to you next week.